Hello, it's Steph and welcome to episode 76 of the Creating Happy Writers podcast. Thanks for joining me today. It's a great guest episode for you and I can't wait for you to listen. If you don't know me, I'm a multi-published author and a writing coach on a mission to take away the overwhelm and the confusion and the frustration out of the writing process and give you confidence and the knowledge you need to write a book that helps you stand out, earn more and be known in your niche. If writing a book for your business is up there on your to-do list for 2025, then please do check out two things I have for you. The first one is my free email newsletter, The Write Stuff, which is full of writing and publishing advice, and you can get that to your inbox every Thursday lunchtime. And the second option for you is to buy my book, Dare to Write, which takes you all the way, step by step, from your initial idea for your business book all the way through to publishing your manuscript. You can find it on Amazon right now. And I will share both of the links to those things in the show notes. Right, let's get on with today's guest episode where I'm talking to the brilliant Amber Byers. Amber is the head judge of the Tadpole Press 100 Word Writing Contest, an international writing contest celebrating creativity and community. She blogs regularly at Living a Life Imagined, which is dedicated to positivity and authenticity. Amber's published works include The Magic Door Origin Story, which is a sci-fi story inspired by her childhood, and Sophie and Spot, which won a gold medal from Moonbeam Children's Book Awards. During our conversation, we talk about Amber's journey from being an attorney to a writer and diversity editor, how we can all learn to listen to our gut when it comes to our writing. Amber explains her body compass idea to help us tune into our authentic selves, why some writers can struggle with calling themselves authors and how we can make that process feel less daunting and more enjoyable, how to find a greater playfulness in our writing in order to enjoy it more and embrace the fact that we're always learning, even when we have a few books under our belts. I thoroughly enjoyed talking to Amber about her writing and publishing journey. I hope you enjoy listening. You've had a bit of a journey to do what you do now. You started off as an attorney and you're now a writer. Can you tell me a little bit about that journey?
Yeah, I would say actually my career started off as an attorney, but my identity and my passion started off as a kid as a writer. So I've kind of always known that I was a writer. That was just who I was and what I loved. So, but the transition from being an attorney to being a writer was really a long time coming. I knew from the first semester of law school that it wasn't a good fit for me. I didn't enjoy the adversarial system where two people are fighting and most likely only one is going to win. And yet I wasn't sure how to quit. I didn't have that experience because I was, you know, a type A, you know, good student, just go, 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 achieve. And so I kept at it and stayed in the legal field for almost a decade before, I had been looking for ways out, but it was when I got laid off and I thought, no, I'm really, really done. And let's just give this writing thing a try and see what comes of it. And then once I started writing, I realized, okay, I'm going to figure out a way to make this my new career because I knew I didn't want to go back at that point.
Oh, wow. So it's something that you have then felt as though is part of you from childhood, the writer side of you. Is that right?
Absolutely.
It's interesting because I often think about, I've always loved books. I've always been an absolute voracious reader. You know, I love reading. I have done as a child. It was a real escapism, but I didn't see myself as a writer until much later. So I'm always fascinated to sort of know when people begin to get that urge to be a writer and whether we're born writers, whether we're people who can learn to love it or, yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? How this all comes about for us as creatives to know whenabouts we made that decision to claim, I suppose, the title of writer.
Yeah, that is an interesting question too of, I don't think I really thought about it as a kid. It just was, I wrote stories and I would package them up in little like folders. I remember my dad who was a university professor, taking me to the university bookstore to get the little folders. I don't even know what they're called, like not the hard binders, but the soft like paper folders that you could use a three ring prongs to put papers into. And those would be my Christmas presents to my family. And I would illustrate them a little bit, but the writing is what really felt like my identity. And it was interesting too, because I went back and read some old journals from middle school, and I was talking about not just being an author, but being an author of children's books. And I had completely forgotten that. And yet that was the first book that I created. And so I was like, oh, that is really interesting. I knew that I always wanted to be a writer. And I knew I forgot for a period of time and went to law school and spent my time in the legal profession and as an attorney. But it does, it feels a bit like coming home to me to,
oh, absolutely,
to say I'm a writer.
I love that, because I feel with the books I write that often they live in my head for quite a while before I do anything with them. So I'll have an idea for a book, be it a novel or be it a nonfiction, and that I'll think of it. And then I sort of let it just percolate in my head for a while. And then I feel like sometimes the ones that I don't ever really plan the order of them, maybe I should, but I don't really plan the order of particularly nonfiction. It's always the one that is almost knocking the loudest to be heard and to come out on the page. Do you find that too with your books?
The one that just won't go away or keeps persistently knocking. Yeah, that's it. I love that analogy, because it is, it's like an almost the idea or the concept is this external entity begging you, please open your door. Let's create this beautiful thing together. I love that image.
Yeah, and I think if we try and resist it, it persists anyway. Like maybe like you were saying, when you went to law school and you had your career, which was nothing to do with writing, there was always a part of you, I guess, that just kept coming back to it, even maybe fleetingly at times, but it was still there as something that you loved, that interested you, but you had to almost put it to one side for a bit, but it didn't want to be quietened down. It wanted to be heard. So I love that. I love that you came back round full circle to it. I think that's what an incredible journey to have been on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. I remember there were points in my career where if there was ever a crossroads, and I was talking to a friend and she said, what would you want to do if you weren't doing law? And she's like, because some people have this dream of, you know, maybe opening a bakery or something. And I was like, oh, it's always been writing. Of course it's writing. Like never. I understood like that whole like idea that somebody would have just to want to open a bakery or that was their love. But for me, it was so clear. It was just a matter of how do I make it practically work? How can I create this in my daily life or in my career in a way that works for me and is sustainable? And what does that look like? And eventually it's evolved over time, but I've just pieced it together and I love it.
I think sometimes we assume that everything goes in a straightforward fashion, and I'm learning, maybe perhaps it's a midlife thing, although my friend tells me often I say that we're in midlife, but we have to be honest with ourselves. As I go through my 40s, I think I realize that it's so important to not try to cling on to how things pan out for you. And I think that it's a certain way that things are going to go, maybe with my writing or, you know, with aspects of business or whatever it could be. And I cling quite rigidly, or I have done, to how I get to those goals and how I achieve them. But actually, by letting go and just trying to see where the path takes you, it's terrifying, but also liberating, isn't it? To almost to allow ourselves to see what unfolds.
Absolutely. It is. It's that fear of the unknown is such a powerful force in our lives, because if we look back, we can see, oh, yeah, everything worked out. And sure, maybe there was some ups and some downs or some bumps in the road, but it's less painful or less scary to look back. But looking forward, it's like staring into the great unknown. And as much as we know that's a part of the human condition, it's really difficult to grapple with.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. I know partly what you're interested in and what you support people with is around the confidence aspects of writing and feeling as though you're a writer. And I wanted to come back to something you said, because you said that you found that writing was part of your identity and that you saw yourself as a writer. But it's difficult because I'm often asked by people, maybe when I'm a guest on a podcast, they'll say, when should I call myself a writer? Or I don't feel comfortable using that label, because they almost feel like they have to reach certain milestones before they're allowed, in inverted commas, to call themselves writers or authors. How do you, would you approach that if somebody said to you that they don't feel ready to call themselves a writer? They might want to, but they're not sure if there's the right time to do it. How would you go about helping them with that?
That's an interesting question, and one that I've heard as well. And really, I would just dig into, what are the thoughts? What are the emotions that are coming up? Why are you thinking that? What is the concept of being a writer or being an author mean to you? And is it a case of imposter syndrome? Is it just a stereotype that you're clinging to of, this is what authors look like, or this is how many books they've sold, or this is, you know, we tend to really narrow the identity to very, very successful people who have written and published books. And we don't have to. It can be as broad as just remembering that if you are writing, or if you have written something, you're a writer. And so I would really be curious to find out, what is it that is in their heads that is causing them to think and fear? And is it more of an emotion, or is it more of an idea or a limiting belief that we can dig into and just see where it goes?
Yeah, I've spoken to people before who, when I'm supporting them to write their books, they'll say, when I was at school, this happened to me. This teacher said this to me about my writing. And I had one lovely lady who said, my teacher used to make me rub out with an eraser. Like, every time I didn't get something right, I had to rub out the whole thing and start again. And it stuck with her. And she's like me, she's in her early 40s. This happened to her when she was 9 or 10. And she didn't feel like she was ever going to be able to write a book, because this belief that had been planted, that, you know, that you have, there's almost a perfection element to that, for sure. But also that you can't almost experience writing for what it is, which is this sort of creative flow of good ideas, bad ideas, ideas that you have, and then you think, I'm going to change those and edit them. And it is a fluid thing. It's not a, you have to get it right first time. As soon as you put pen to paper, it has to be perfect. And she'd taken this belief from childhood, and 30 years later, we're having the conversation about the fact that she doesn't think she'll ever be able to write a book because she can still remember being told that the writing wasn't good enough.
Wow. You know what's interesting, though? I know I've heard people in the same situation who, for some reason, whether it's a person or an experience, has come and really deflated their confidence. But what's interesting to me is, you said that person was talking about it 30 years later, and yet they haven't given up on the idea. And so there's something as powerful as, unfortunately, it can be to have somebody crush our dreams. What I love is there's so much more power that she's retaining and not giving into, because she knows there's something valuable and something specific to her. It's not like, oh, I can just hand this off and somebody else can create the thing that's in my head. There's something specific and individual. And yeah, I love that.
Me too. I think you're right. Again, it comes back to the fact that books want us to write them. And maybe after all this time, she's thought about other options, you know, maybe having a ghostwriter, or maybe just not writing at all. But there's just something, isn't there, about books for people where they thought of this book idea and it just won't leave them alone. It's almost just saying, please just write me. There's something here. We need to listen to our gut. And I know that's something that you talk about and you are interested in, is that kind of the idea of listening to our intuition listening to our gut and following our gut. And I'm fascinated by the gut-brain connection. I think it's super interesting around the vagus nerve and how, you know, we often will disregard the gut feeling because we're then trying to think logically. How do you feel around guiding ourselves with our guts and our instincts? What do you think works best in terms of trusting it a bit more, I suppose?
Absolutely. I love how you bring in the vagus nerve connection too, because I've learned lately that the body speaks its own language, and if you can tune into it, that can help you understand this is what's coming from me, as opposed to sorting out all those ideas from other people or all the external sources that you think might be telling you to do something one way. But when you tap into your own body and listen to your gut or your heart or wherever you're feeling things, that's a beautiful way to find out this is what aligns with me. And I actually had a business coach in the past who taught me to do a body scan, where if you are considering something, it's helpful if you have, you can do it with one option or more than one option. But if you're just trying to figure out, does this make sense for me? You imagine the situation, you can close your eyes, just, you know, picture the situation, whatever it is, whether it's, yes, I'm going to write this book, say, and then you picture in your body, you just kind of scan down from your head all the way down to your toes and look for anything that feels tight. Look for anything that might feel dark or shadowy, or if your shoulders come forward and kind of hunch, that can be a sign that you're constricting. And if you feel that like sick to your stomach feeling in your gut, that can be a feeling that means this isn't in alignment. So then you can open your eyes and shake it off and do the same thing. If you get a feeling that there's lightness, or maybe your shoulders come back, or everything feels like clear and easy and full of momentum, or you might feel like tingly excitement somewhere, that's a sign that whatever you're thinking about is resonating in your body. And if the more you learn to tap into that, the easier it's going to be to remember, this is my authentic voice. And sure, there's plenty of people out there who might want me to do something different or who have a different idea. But that's one way to find out. And it can be subtle, but sometimes, you know, we've all had that feeling in the pit of our stomach where we're like, ooh, this is a bad idea.
Yeah, 100%. Yes, I can totally relate to that. And you're right. I think there's two things I wanted to come back about that, because I find it fascinating. I think firstly, it's trying to work out, I suppose, whether our gut is, and I think this is really important when you were talking about the feeling, because sometimes our gut can try to warn us off things. And like you say, it can, we think it's a bad idea. And it's trying to distinguish, I guess, whether that's fear of what we want to do, or whether it's actually, do not do this, this is a terrible idea. So I think there's a real ease that comes, I suppose, when you're doing that kind of body scan exercise, where you can actually just focus in on what actually is my gut trying to tell me, or my intuition trying to tell me about this. Is it that I just need to sometimes lean into the discomfort and do the hard things that can feel hard and stressful and slightly, wow, I'm really stepping out of my comfort zone? Or is it, like you said, that if you get this kind of real churn of, actually, this isn't a good idea at all, and that it's that subtle difference, isn't it, between those two things of fear and just do not do this, this is a terrible idea.
You're right. It can be really subtle. And it's okay if you mess up and mistake one for the other, because as you move forward in whichever direction you've chosen, your body's going to continue to send you cues. And so if you have decided that maybe it's fear and you go forward and then you realize, oh no, this is actually still feeling like heavy, I'm not excited, because fear has a little bit of that excitement energy that's attached to it. It can feel like anxiety, but also like nervous excitement. And so it's figuring out, making your best guess in the moment, and then making a decision moving forward. And then you can reevaluate it and decide, oops, that was the wrong decision, I'm going to change it now. Or, oh, maybe the situation has changed and it isn't a good fit for me anymore, or whatever.
Yeah. I also think sometimes, like you said, it's not a wrong decision sometimes, even if the outcome isn't what you want it to be, or you feel like afterwards. And this is, I think, a thing I'm trying to tune into more as a writer, as a human, is to think to myself, you know what, I didn't listen to my gut, and therefore this has happened now. But also, like, but that's okay, because this has taught me something, and it's something that I know I can then put in place to stop this happening again, or not to make a similar mistake again. And that's why I sometimes feel like the more that we can learn from our mistakes, to embrace mistakes, especially even in the writing process, you know, I think we're get so het up on this idea of perfection, that our books have to be perfect and they can't be seen by anybody until everything is just absolutely spot on. And you know, I know that that's never going to be the case. That you cannot be a perfect writer. No book is going to be perfect, because it's just, if you are waiting for perfection, you will never publish anything, because it's just something that is probably fear of what other people are going to say about it. So you're like, no, I have to tweak this again. I have to change this again. And actually, if people feedback, and maybe you write something that maybe people don't agree with, or they have an opinion about, that's okay too, because this is all learning opportunities, right? It's all ways that we can enhance and improve our lives.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that's such a beautiful way to say it. It is. It's just learning. And I would also say it's also just play. Like, we can just play with the words and see what happens, and have that childlike joy with it, and let it be okay if it looks a little messy or comes out a little different than we anticipated, or somebody is out there who's not going to like it. There's plenty of people who have different opinions, and that's great, because there's plenty of books or pieces of writing that can maybe be a better fit for them. Yours doesn't have to be that fit for that person. So yeah, to let go of perfectionism and to tap into, this is my vision, this is my authentic dream or voice, that's where the true joy comes in.
I was thinking, when you were talking about trying to cut out the noise that comes from everything else we consume, right? And I was talking to an author this morning who I'm working with, and we were having this exact conversation. She's in the middle of her first draft, and she was saying to me, you know, Steph, I think that I'm going to just take some time off social media for the next couple of months, because she says, I feel like I can't think my own thoughts anymore, that I'm so surrounded by other people's ideas, other people's beliefs, other people's, you know, voices, that I can't find my own anymore, and that I'm writing stuff that doesn't feel like me, because I'm almost being so consumed by everyone else. And it really made me think there around that body scan activity. And I don't meditate as often as I would like to, but I do find that when I do, and really just go very centered and try and think about, what do I think? What do I feel? What are my opinions about this? I think it's really helpful, particularly when you are writing, because I don't know about you, but I read a lot, because I you know, as I said to you, I've always loved reading. But sometimes, maybe to my detriment, I read so many people who I admire, and I love the genres they write. And I always think, oh, I'd love to be able to write like them. Oh, just to be able to write like this person. When actually, it then dampens my own voice and my own style. Do you feel that sort of introspection, that sort of work to come back to ourselves, is important?
Hugely, for sure. And it's interesting, because some of the voices can have good advice for their own journeys, but it's not necessarily what matches with what we're trying to create. And so figuring out who are the voices that you want to bring in, and the very first one that you should be listening to, or that I hate to use the word should, I would say that I recommend tapping into, is your own authentic voice first, because that's where you have that dance between creativity and yourself, and to kind of play around with the ideas of, this is the gem that I'm discovering in my own writing. But also to recognize there are so many people out there who you can invite into your writing journey. And are they the people who understand your vision, or are they people who are going to try to push you to adhere to their vision? And if their vision doesn't align with yours, then that's a huge key to say, no, thank you, and look for somebody else.
I agree. I did say that to her. We were talking about, because I'm always trying to explain to authors, and often to myself, to be fair, in the first draft, it's that this release any expectation of what you're going to produce, because we often start these journeys of writing books and we think, oh, you know, I want it to sound like this and I want it to be like this. And it's very rarely that our the muse, or, you know, just writing ever goes the way we think it's going to. And that's what you know, you talked about the playful side of it and being playful. And I try to say to authors, yeah, when you're in that first draft, just play around with your thoughts, your ideas. And these are nonfiction writers. But, you know, as a novel writer myself, I know that my characters will often do things that I don't expect them to do. And I remember the first time someone told me that, and I was thinking, what are you on about? Like, surely you're going to know what your characters are doing. And obviously, broadly, you do. But they'll end up like having this random conversation that comes up with another character, and you can't have planned it. And it just comes about, and you're like, oh, okay, now you're doing this now, right? I see. And it's almost the same with nonfiction, you know, being playful, writing what you want to write for the first draft, write the book for you for the first draft, and then editing, and that can always be refined, particularly in nonfiction, for the reader if they're looking to learn something, and, you know, making sure it's as good as it can be for them. But for the first draft, just write what you want to write for yourself. And do you find that with your first drafts?
Absolutely. That's the key time to really just tap into, this is where I'm just going to play. Almost, I'm going to shut out the idea that there are even people who might experience what I'm writing or read it later or have an opinion on it later. No, this is just like a closed door room for me to create and not to worry about it. Because if you incorporate that too much into your writing, it's so easy, at least for me. Maybe some people have more innate confidence and can adhere really strongly to what they're trying to hold onto for their vision. But for me, I can be very easily swayed by other people's opinions. So it's crucial to have that. It's almost alone time. Let me just work on it myself, invite the muse in, play around with these ideas, and then we'll see where that goes. And then we can evaluate who's the community that I want to bring into this journey with me.
Community is massive. And I did have that down as a question, because I am such an advocate of trying not to write alone in terms of throughout your journey. I have to write when I'm in, obviously, literally writing at the laptop. I am very particular. I always sit in the same place, and I always listen to the same soundtrack, and it has to be wordless. I can't have lyrics, because then I sing along and I get very distracted. And it also has to be the same time every day, because I just like to have this little writing ritual, a writing practice that I know I'm showing up for. My brain knows I'm about to write. But there's also, I think, going back to the community point, around having a team of people around you. And then it doesn't happen to be, you know, the size of the Kardashians, you know, glam squad. It's just a case of, can you have people around you that are supporting you in a variety of different ways, be it bouncing ideas off of them, maybe in a writing group, be it your partner, husband, friend, who's there to say, you know, come on, you can do this. When you're having that kind of middle of the book slump where you feel like you're never going to finish it. I don't know, how do you use community to help you when you're writing?
All of the above and more. I would say in the past, I've gone to quiet writing sessions. We had a lot more before the pandemic. There is one still that I've gone to in the last 2 years. Also finding writers groups where I found great critique partners. I've used beta readers, deciding who you want to bring on in terms of editors or if you want a writing coach. All of those are different points throughout the process that you can bring in somebody as into your community. And the other piece, since I'm a writer myself, but I also host an international writing contest, the Tadpole Press 100 Word Writing Contest. And I've just realized in that role, even when I surround myself with people and you know, forge a community in that area of my life, my energy levels go up. My excitement for the work goes up. So I've brought on a team of judges. As I mentioned, I've hired business coaches or marketing managers. And because I realized what a crucial element it was for me, I also realized that's what I want to incorporate into our contest. So we started doing monthly community write-ins where you can come together just on Zoom for a short half an hour and either do an activity. Some are quiet writing. Some we've played bingo for prizes like free feedback. And just getting that support and encouragement from people around you who are going to bring you up, that's the key, is having that uplifting element and the community element, not somebody who's going to tell you, I'm going to smush you down and tell you this is the way things have to be, but instead to just encourage writers wherever they are and to encourage you to stay true to your own vision and to be there throughout the process. That's what I love about it.
Sounds wonderful. I think that's the thing with writing groups, isn't it? If you can get a good one together where people are there to lift each other up, encourage each other, support each other, I think that makes a world of difference. I do think sometimes, unfortunately, people have experiences of writers groups where maybe that's not the way it's done and there can be a sort of somebody's quite critical. And it is really tough when you're starting out and you are already nervous enough about sharing your work. And then somebody comes back and you're at you with a comment. And I can remember when I was first starting writing children's books a long time ago, and I went to a writing conference over here in the UK. And there was an author who just sort of said, tell me your one line synopsis and the title of your book. And we all went round the room. And we all shared it. And I'm a teacher, right? So it doesn't, you know, by sort of trade, if you like, before I became a writer. And so I know a lot about how to feed back to people. And she was just so sharp with everyone and just so dismissive of so many people's concepts. And I just found the whole thing just, I was sat there and I thought, I was sort of middle of the line of people. So you'd already had like all these people who'd had this experience of having quite cutting and dismissive of their concepts. And so you knew it was coming. And the more it was like, you know, it's that sort of coming towards me, I was thinking, oh my gosh. And I remember saying, I can't even remember what the concept was for that particular book. And she was just so dismissive. She was just sort of like, no, that wouldn't work. And I just remember at the time just thinking, I really looked up to you as a published author, somebody who's, you know, done a few books, and you're thinking you're somebody who I really admire, and then you've just done that. And then I was just immediately sat there and was like rethinking, right, do I rethink the whole book? That's it, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. And it takes one person to make one comment, and if you're not someone who can be like, it's okay, just gonna have to shake this off and keep going and cope with rejection, because obviously rejection is a big part of being a writer, sadly, if you go down, you know, certain publishing routes. So it's just it's just hard, isn't it, to get the people around you that forge the right kind of community for your work, and not to get disheartened if you try a writing group and it doesn't quite work for you, to not give up, I think, and actually go and keep looking for them, because they are out there, aren't they, these wonderfully supportive ones.
Yes, absolutely. That's so sad too, that you saw it coming around the room and were like, okay, what do I do? And I was thinking, just get up and go to the restroom, or like not be pass or something, because it's you kind of know what's coming at that point. And it almost has less to do with you or your concept or what you created, and more to do with that one person who's moderating. And yet we hear it because we share this most vulnerable piece of ourselves with what we've created. And it's really hard to disengage and have the distance to recognize, oh no, this actually is more to do about this one person than it is about me or my writing. And so that's I've had experiences like that. And that's why I realize, just to find people who are going to get you and going to support you. I actually had one person tell me the word that she used was weird. What I was putting together was weird and not how it's done. And I was like, oh, and at the time, you know, I had respect for this person. I was realizing, okay, well, this is what she's saying is industry standard. And later I was like, why did I even listen to that? If somebody is going to say that, something that harsh to your face, like, this is not somebody you want on your team. So, you know, it's tricky. It's definitely a learning lesson, but when we find the people who can celebrate with you and understand that we're all on our own journeys, that's what's really key. That's the beauty in it. And that's my focus of what I try to do at Tadpole Press.
And that sounds wonderful. So I'm glad that you're doing it, because I think there needs to be certainly a more collective responsibility, I suppose, amongst writers to make sure that new writers, or even it's that you have to be a new writer. You could have been doing something very quietly for the last 20 years. And the first time you step out of your comfort zone and share something and you get that response, you'll be like, right, that's it. I'm retracting back for another 20 years. I don't want to share. And I think we do have a responsibility, I think, as writers within the community and with each other, to try and lift each other up wherever possible. And if we are feeding back something, just to be mindful of how we do it and to be constructive and helpful, but in a way that makes somebody feel empowered to carry on, not absolutely shrunk down and just made to feel as though they shouldn't even bother trying. Because yeah, it's hard being a writer enough as without anyone else piling in and telling you their opinion, which doesn't always help. Yeah. We just love to ask you a bit about your diversity editor role, because it's not something that I've ever spoken to anybody on the podcast about. Can you just share a bit about what that involves?
Yeah, absolutely. So diversity editing is most closely related to developmental editing, where rather than looking at copy editing, which is the grammar and punctuation, but looking at the big items, kind of the broad stroke, but it's not evaluating the full context that goes into developmental editing, like the plot and the characters. It's really tuned into specific elements that's decided between the editor and the writer. And that can be anything from race to gender to body type. And it's helpful especially if the writer is writing about somebody or an issue that's outside of their lived experience, to have somebody who has more intimate knowledge with it to come in and say, here's what I'm seeing. Is this what you're trying to create? Here is something that doesn't seem like it's consistent or coherent with my experiences. Is this intentional? And allows the writer to come in and say, I was trying to create this element and I'm not sure if this is coming off okay. How does this sound to you? And just to have a dialogue back and forth of how can we portray these characters or these issues in a way that's most accurate or respectful or true to the story, as well as, you know, not just reflecting the implicit bias that unfortunately we all grow up with.
Absolutely. And have you found that's a role that you are being asked to do more and more?
So I did do it a lot up until last spring, and I kind of made a switch from editing was the bulk of what I used to do, and diversity editing and then developmental editing were the two main areas that I did. And I made a switch last spring to focus on just my own writing and our writing contest. But the diversity editing, I still get requests specifically for Native American characters or Native American themes. And I still offer, so while I'm not actively seeking editing clients, occasionally I'll get requests from somebody who's found my profile and looking for specifically a Native American diversity editor. And two of the prizes that that we offer through the contest that are not just cash prizes coming from Tadpole Press are a editing package or a writing coaching package. So I still have that way that I work with people. But yeah, I have seen more and more, I would say what people are coming to me with is Native American or Indigenous characters or issues. And it was interesting for a while, I was getting a ton of requests about very historical characters, really writing about a lot of battles in the past. And it was back to back to back. And those were kind of difficult ones because I my experience is much more modern. And yes, I have some of the history, but my interest isn't in reading about the tribes that have been slaughtered and wiped out, especially since it's so personal for me. And so it was really interesting, though, because once I considered it and turned down some of those clients, now all that I'm getting are more modern ones. I just did a children's picture book. It does have some historical elements looking back through time, but has the modern acknowledgement that there are still Indigenous people today and what that looks like.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like great work you're doing. And I think it's fantastic that there are people like you out there that authors can get in touch with and to make sure that books are doing and saying the right things, because that is, it's challenging, isn't it, to make sure that as an author, you feel like you are representing characters in the right way and that you are, you know, doing the right job of going about that. So that's, yeah, I mean, it sounds fascinating what you're doing. So yeah, it sounds great. And I love the fact that competitions you run with Tadpoles, you know, are providing opportunities for new writers and things. I think it's fantastic. Before we go, I'd love to know, what do you enjoy the most about being a writer?
I love that question. I think my answer right now comes down to play, is because I realized a few months ago that after I'd published my first book and won an award and created this successful company, and, you know, I do all of my writing for my blog and my emails, I realized that I had inadvertently invited in this sense of meaning or purpose, or it had to be serious again, like from my old career as an attorney. And as soon as I realized that, I pushed back on that and said, I just want to play around like I played as a kid in the sandbox. And I'm just going to play with some words and invite that lightheartedness in. And that's what I've been doing. And it's completely disorganized and completely sporadic. And I love it. That's just where I'm at myself in the writing journey.
I love that. I love that. I've just made the decision this year as well to try and open up more space for my writing in my head, because I've had a period of 6 months now where I've been working very hard for other people and their writing. and I've not been giving the same amount of love and care to my own writing practice. So I really made the decision that from sort of the after the summer to be focusing so much more on space, creative space in my head, on the page, to just try and allow the words to, like you said, to be playful and just to experiment and see, you know, what works, what's not working, like how I feel about certain characters or certain book ideas I have. And when you don't have that space, that creative energy to give to it, it can feel so, I found it just so stifling in terms of not being able to write, which I haven't been able to for 6 months now. It's been the longest in probably 15 years that I've not written. And it's really hard when that's the thing you love the most to not find the space and the time to do it. So I love to hear that you are finding that space and time and playfulness because it's so important, right?
Yeah, it's so fun. It's just, it kind of takes you into the moment a little bit. I know you said you don't meditate a lot, but it is a little bit of that in the moment experience because you can't be thinking about the future or the past. You're just in the zone and it feels so good.
It does. It does. I always ask my guests just one last question, which is if you had one piece of advice for an aspiring writer, what would that piece of advice be?
I love this question, especially if it's for, I think anybody along the writing journey, but aspiring writers especially, it would be to listen to your authentic voice and have confidence that the world needs to hear your story. Because especially when some voices are so loud, or like that person, the moderator who is so dismissive, if somebody is trying to get you to adhere to their way, that's really flattening the experience of literature. And what I love is all the different ways you can create a story and all the ways we can diversify literature. And so I would just say, listen to your authentic voice and remember that the world needs to hear your story.
What a great thing to finish on. Thank you, Amber. I've loved our conversation. I feel like we could have gone on for another hour or so, but I really enjoyed talking to you, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to be here.
That really was a wonderful conversation, wasn't it? A really big thank you to Amber for giving up her time to talk to me. I thought she brought a wonderful perspective to the writing process, particularly when we were talking about listening to our intuition and trying to avoid being too consumed with other people's ideas so it doesn't tone down our own voice. Fascinating conversation. If you know someone else who'd enjoy it, please share it with them. I'll link to Amber's website and social media profiles in the show notes so you can find out more about her and buy a copy of any of her books. If you'd like to leave a review of this episode on your favourite podcast platform, I would be very, very grateful. But until next time, happy writing.